The slow build towards training camp and actual practices happening continues. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bo Brock, Alex Clancy joining you on this Wednesday edition of the podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter at Bob Brack, at Clancy's Corner, and at Locked On AZ Cards. A lot to get into. A couple division foes are getting their offenses ranked ahead of the high-flying Arizona Cardinals. We'll get into that, as well as the offensive line losing a member, a starter potentially. We'll get into who could potentially replace the guy that's opting out for the 2020 season. And let's get into that conversation immediately here, Alex. A potential starter, and I think it was inevitable. I think you'll see it across the league. We've already seen it with a bunch of Patriots. But one of the Cardinals now finally having a starter, a player opting out for the 2020 season, and that's your Locked On Cardinals lead story. I'm Bo Brock along with Alex Clancy. So what a difference a week makes. At this point last week, Cliff Kingsbury was saying that Marcus Gilbert was going to get the first crack at the starting right tackle position. Now Gilbert's opting out. He posted on Twitter, after much thought and prayer, I've decided to opt out for the 2020 season, blah, blah, blah. Goes through it a little bit. He signed a one-year deal worth over $1 million to return to Arizona this offseason. Now, instead, he'll receive $350,000 high-risk stipend, which doesn't have to be returned or paid back. And then his contract for this year will roll over to next season.
Yeah, I mean, this is unfortunately, this is the world in which we live now. And it's, listen, Bo, this is the excitement of the unknown when it comes to Marcus Gilbert. He hasn't played a full season in a while. We don't know what he's got left in the tank. I mean, he was traded for a couple years ago, tore his ACL before the season started. And this isn't like Josh Jones opting out. This isn't DJ Humphries opting out. It's going to be, there's going to be some impact on the offensive line, obviously, because he's the elder statesman of the group and a guy that you probably trust the most to anchor the right side of the line at this point. But in what capacity, we don't know. I mean, he could have been week one starter and then gotten taken out for Justin Murray or Josh Jones at mid-game. We have no idea. But yeah, it's a story because it's the first guy and we just of the Cardinals, and we just hope that this maybe won't be a trend. And I don't foresee it to be, but little story, big story, I don't know. It's probably somewhere in the middle.
I think I just want to lay the facts out there because I think you could rampantly speculate on what's going on here. Because when I do look at the Arizona Cardinals offensive line, outside of DJ Humphries, there are a bunch of guys that could be starters and be impact makers or not even make the roster. And I feel the same. I feel like that way about Marcus Gilbert, to where he's a guy that, yeah, absolutely could start at right tackle or not even make this team. And if there's not a lot of guarantees in the NFL, so let's look at this. Gilbert signed that one-year deal. It rolls over to next year. If he doesn't make the team next year, he gets $150,000 guaranteed. So he just added more guaranteed money to his contract, gets another year out of it with this $350,000 stipend, and he doesn't have to play it down. So I don't know. People can look at it. He was put on the non-football illness list on Sunday after a failed physical, and Cliff Kingsbury acknowledged that move was related to the physical and called it procedural. But, you know, the agreement was signed, that high-risk stipend will be without payback confirmed. So Gilbert gets an opportunity to make some money and then potentially make this roster next year. For me, when I'm looking at Marcus Gilbert and his inability to get on the football field the last nearly, five seasons now, I think you kind of move forward after this. You say, okay, we understand why you opted out. We absolutely don't have any problem with that. Here's your $350K, and I think we should probably just mutually part ways.
Yeah, I mean, and this may be a time, Bo, where we can kind of reflect just momentarily on how far the Cardinals have come, that this is an issue, but it's something that's talked about as the main issue that's going on with the Cardinals right now. I mean, look at where we were in 2018 when it was, who's the quarterback going to be? Who the receiver is going to be? Is this defense going to be okay? Does Steve Wilks know what he's doing? Is Mike McCoy going to be able to make a comeback? And then all of that went wrong. It seems like the Cardinals are stable in a majority of the positions where there were question marks surrounding them. And now we're focusing on a right tackle who hasn't played in over a year, coming off an ACL tear, that's opting out as the main issue the Cardinals are facing going into the 2020 season. That should feel pretty good, right?
No, absolutely. I get that. I mean, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, it's not diminishing the conversation we're having. It's just nice to just take a step back and be like, whoa, it's moving forward.
Right. And, I mean, I feel like Jerry Maguire right now, and I'm grabbing the fish out of the tank, and I'm looking at Renee Zellweger, and that's it. I'm saying, who's coming with me? Who wants to make this jump after winning just 8 games in 2 seasons? I know it's a small group. I know it's our listeners out there. I know it's the Red Sea. I know there are a bunch of people that want to jump on the bandwagon and go into changing the culture and the perception. And I just don't see guys who've played 12 games and 48 potential games and now opting out. I just think, you know, Kyler Murray's a gamer, and it starts with him. And I want everybody who has that mentality, the Larry Fitzgeralds, DeAndre Hopkins, to be on that, to go usher in the future of Cardinals football. And I think, you know, you have an opportunity to maybe develop Josh Jones. Hopefully he doesn't have to play too much this season, and Justin Murray can just step right in, or Kelvin Beachum. I don't know what it looks like, but I don't know. I think Marcus Gilbert is, yeah, you brought him in, late round draft pick to the Steelers, really not that big a deal, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, and if that's where it ends, yeah, if that's where it ends, that's where it ends. You know, you traded Kenyon Drake, you traded a 5th round pick for Kenyon Drake, it seemed to have worked out, and if you trade, what was it? You said a 7th. It was 7th round pick, yeah. So yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, at this point, it's just if this is going to be the last time he wears a Cardinals jersey, then so be it.
There are a couple guys that we mentioned them already that are going to vie for the starting right tackle position. Plus, a guy that the Cardinals just signed today, or at least there's reports of it. We'll talk about. We'll speculate who our picks are to start at the right tackle position for the Arizona Cardinals, potentially game one. Also, the Arizona Cardinals, they are looking up at a couple division foes in the offensive rankings, surprisingly. We'll get into that conversation as well. It's Locked On Cardinals. It's Bo Brock, Alex Clancy, at Bob Rack, at Clancy's Corner, at AZ, Locked On AZ Cards on Twitter. Give us a follow there. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. It's just been incredible having the NBA back. The shot that Devin Booker made yesterday just has to have you excited overall, just for the landscape of Phoenix sports. I mean, mid-afternoon, Alex, I'm just sitting there watching an NBA game, and I get to see this. I get live sports back into my life, and the Suns are now 3-0. Make sure to check out Locked On Phoenix Suns, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. I don't know. I loved it. And I get excited when I think about Devin Booker. I think of Kyler Murray, these young stars.
Yeah. You know, for those that have been listening to this podcast for a long time, in 2018, I believe I called the draft of Josh Rosen the pivot that Phoenix needed. I was way premature. This is the time where young stars are seemingly taking over the scene of what was once a decrepit mid-30s, a star base. And now it's just, with Booker yesterday, it kind of was a, what are you doing, oh, great shot, kind of situation. I mean, let's call it what it was. But, yeah. I agree. Kyler, Devin Booker, if the Diamondbacks can find anybody,
Ace fine, right? I mean, he's not as young as, he's close, but he's not as young as those two. And, you know, baseball doesn't hold as much star power as the NFL or the NBA. But, man, I'm not as big of a basketball guy as you, and I'll try to keep it, especially to our football listeners out there. But Paul George was the one guarding Devin Booker on that play, right?
Isn't he
a really good defender? But I feel like I've seen Paul George get game-winning jumpers buried in his face like on a regular basis.
It's so much worse with that happening than getting posterized. Like, I'd much rather get posterized than have Damian Lillard hit a 40-footer in my eye hole to send my team home when he was with OKC. Those are the two game winners, two most recent game winners that Paul George was a part of on the opposite side. And the craziest part was that he played perfect defense on both.
Yeah.
Like, he was looking with the Damian Lillard one, he was looking on the opposite side of the court's game clock ahead above the basket. He's like, okay, he's shooting the ball in the next 0.5 seconds. I'm going to put my hand through his eyes so he can't see. He drills a 40-footer to clinch a series. And then yesterday, I mean,
he had help with from Kawhi Leonard too. Like that, and Kawhi Leonard even touched, or Paul George even touched that ball when it was still in Devin Booker's hands, and he still got it off and didn't hit rim. So I don't know. Paul George is a star-crossed lover with himself when it comes to game winners. For sure.
I don't know if I could have said it as poetic as you just did, but it was. It's just amazing to have live sports back. And as the NFL continues to be steadfast with their approach to the 2020 NFL season, it doesn't seem like anything's going to get in their way, barring like this pandemic getting even more out of control than it already has. But the Arizona Cardinals getting their first opt-out, and it's a potential starter right tackle, Marcus Gilbert. He's going to sit out the season. The team did make a move today. They signed Coda Martin, former Syracuse offensive lineman. He's for tackle depth, but they have already, I mean, luckily, they already had some depth on this roster. Now you look towards Justin Murray, a guy who started, 12 games for the Cardinals at the right tackle position, played in 14 overall, picked up off the waivers from the Raiders at some point last season, and really filled in nicely for the Cardinals. Kelvin Beachum, a guy who started at left tackle for the Jets for the last three seasons, and then you've got the rookie Josh Jones. Alex, who intrigues you the most? Who do you think is probably the best player to start at right tackle and we'll get the first crack at it? Who do you want? Is it the same guy?
It's interesting because first off, and this is something that gets overlooked that I don't even think that you and I have talked about. Kelvin Beachum was the right tackle for Le'Veon Bell. When Le'Veon Bell, 2013, 2014, and I think 2015, I think Kelvin Beachum was there for 3 years when Le'Veon Bell was there. If not, it was definitely 2013, Lev's rookie year, and 2014, which was his breakout year. Anybody that's been around a system that's worked with the running back position, whether it be through the air or on the ground, that gives me pause for excitement. It doesn't pause. Like, if you could say, hey, you could get the right tackle of Le'Veon Bell's best year in Pittsburgh, would you take him? You say yes right away, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I didn't even know that little fun fact.
Yeah, no, I just knew he was with Pittsburgh at a certain time. He started his career, and he came in a year before Le'Veon Bell did, so he started 16 games in Le'Veon Bell's breakout year, so I don't know what that means. I don't know if the guards were more important to their offense than the tackles because he ran and had so many screen passes in the middle, Le'Veon Bell did, but having a guy like that would be beneficial. Now, who do I think they should start is Kelvin Beachum at this point, and it's something that it's experience. And Sean Coogler was the offensive line coach then, so he has that history there in Pittsburgh with Sean Coogler. I found that out today. And but who do I think they should start? I think they should start Josh Jones. I mean, I think this is it's like when you have a sales director hire somebody that has no sales experience because they have no bad habits yet. And Josh Jones has no bad NFL habits yet. So I think starting with a Tyree LaRosa clean slate is better than having a guy that obviously isn't good enough to be rostered somewhere else because he's not rostered somewhere else.
Yeah, I just think, especially game one, San Francisco, and all that they're returning outside of DeForest Buckner on that front seven, and you're going to potentially have a guy like Josh Jones, who, according to Pro Football Focus, since they started evaluating college offensive linemen, had the best offensive lineman season they've ever, you know, recorded. But we still have, you know, why did he slide to 72 overall in the draft? A lot of the scouts were looking at his technique. I think he would probably be best start on the sidelines, and then seeing guys like Justin Murray and Kelvin Beachum, like you mentioned, get the, you know, at least game one. Game two, it doesn't even get that much easier. I mean, Washington's front seven is pretty stacked as well, as bad as that team's been. They just added Chase Young. They've got Ryan Kerrigan. Do you want Josh Jones going up against those guys? He never faced any pass rushers that caliber while starting at Houston.
Yeah, and I also he played only left tackle at Houston, right?
True.
I don't think he's played right tackle. So
right.
I don't listen. As you said, as we've talked about, he's a great backup for DJ Humphries if need be. I feel like that's where everybody plays, but when you get older, you sometimes shift to the other side of the line. We saw it with Jared Valdir.
Yeah,
and it's not easy. It's like, so I can't remember who the lineman that came out and said it was. I think it was Jeff Schwartz. I heard him say when they were going to move Valdir over, it's like being left-handed your whole life and then having to learn how to be right-handed.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just easy just shifting along to the other side of the line. So with that concern, I guess I understand not starting Josh Jones week one, especially in a new position. But when it comes down to it, I just, with the pandemic going on, we can't see anything, so we don't know.
Yeah.
It's going to be such a crapshoot.
It's going to be so important for these coaches in practices to evaluate these players and make these tough decisions. I honestly don't know how they're, I mean, I know they can do it at the college level, but, you know, you're not going up against FCS opponents. You're going up against the NFC champion game one. You're not exactly playing Northern Arizona. So, and speaking of which, the San Francisco 49ers are ahead of the Arizona Cardinals in the offensive rankings. I want to get into a conversation because I think that that's, I don't see any reality where that's the correct take. We'll get into that. It's Locked On Cardinals, Bo Brock, Alex Clancy, at Bob Rack, at Clancy's Corner on Twitter, at Locked On AZ Cards. We'll be right back. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. All right, so The Athletic put out a doozy of offensive rankings, and it has two of the Arizona Cardinals division foes ahead of the Cardinals, who are supposed, their calling card is supposed to be their offense. We don't know what's going to happen on the defensive side of the football. I know that they added Isaiah Simmons. They added three starters via free agency, and potentially Robert Alford could slide into the corner opposite Patrick Peterson after missing all of last season. But the offense is supposed to be where they're going to make their money. And, you know, Kyler Murray, there's big expectations, obviously, with DeAndre Hopkins, Kenyon Drake coming back on the transition tag. And then I look at this Athletic rankings, and of course the Chiefs are number one. And then you've got, you know, the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, and that offense number two. Drew Brees and the Saints offense has probably been in the top five for the last decade. They're three. Dallas, number four. And I think statistically, Dallas was number one in the league last year. And then you start to get to a couple NFC West teams. Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks are five, and then the Niners are six. So it's not exactly complete disrespect for the Cardinals, who sit at seven. But I got to think that the Cardinals, their personnel on offense, is better, at least on paper, than the Niners.
You know what? Yeah, I guess. I mean, the running back core is really good there. You know, you got to look at, I guess, what happened last year with the output. And I guess they hold Jimmy Garoppolo in higher regard than rational people do. You know.
Is the only place where the Cardinals, when you talk to the non-Cardinals fan and you get an objective ranking, obviously George Kittle is probably the best player out of all the offensive players of the two teams. And then you've got the quarterbacks. You pit Kyler Murray versus Jimmy G. Who are you taking?
I don't know.
It's a tough. It's pretty even, isn't it?
Yeah.
As far as the running back position, you mentioned Mozart. You take him over Kenyon Drake right now?
Well, and Tevin Coleman, Jerick McKinnon. I mean, they have guys for days.
Yeah.
They have guys for days. There, Debo has shown some stuff. They lost Emmanuel Sanders. So, like, when you're looking at it, and you see Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk is their top receivers?
Yikes.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, Debo showed flashes last year. I mean, listen, he was a glorified Andy Isabella. I mean, he ran a lot more end-arounds than actually having huge, meaningful catches earlier in the year, and then, you know, they built him into the system. But you're right. I mean, it's George Kittle, and it's that running back room. With Tevin Coleman back and Raheem Mostert getting the money that he wanted, I think they restructured his deal again to get him paid a little bit more. They signed Jordan Reed to an incentive-laden contract, which could be sneaky if he stays healthy.
Big if.
Yeah, of course. I mean, coming from a Washington professional football team fan, I know that you've been burned by that fire too much. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, again, I've said that a lot this podcast, I think depth-wise, the 49ers got the Cardinals beat. I would say DeAndre Hopkins is the best of all of them. I know you might say George Kittle, just say 1 and 1A, say they cancel each other out. When it comes, and it say Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyler Murray cancel each other out, you take those two away, San Francisco's got the Cardinals trumped.
Yeah, but their offensive line isn't that much better, and we don't know what Trent Williams is going to bring with this complete season removed being off the playing field. He replaces Joe Staley at the left tackle position. I mean, I don't know, and bringing back into the equation the Seattle Seahawks, which I understand Russell Wilson just puts you in the top 10 as far as offense is just alone, but then you look at what else do they have? I know they've got a good running back by committee. It's good just because their game plan is to run it down your throat, and they're just going to get the opportunities to gash you on the ground. But like Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde doesn't strike fear in my heart. And then you've got, yeah, Greg Olsen at this point in his career is nice to add to the Seahawks, but he's not exactly a world beater. And then you take in consideration that Russell Wilson was sacked just as many times as Kyler Murray last season, and I don't see their offensive line improving more than the Cardinals did this year just by Kyler Murray getting rid of the football quicker than he did last season.
You know, I would...
Tyler Murray, I mean, Tyler Lockett and
DK Metcalf.
Metcalf.
That's a solid, like, I would almost say that they're undervalued, underrated on this list. Because if you take Russell Wilson, would you take Russell Wilson over Dak? Yes. Would you take Russell Wilson over Drew Brees at this point? I would say yes. Like, the Saints are always overly hyped offensively. Seriously, I mean, you look at it. I mean, adding Emmanuel Sanders is great, okay? But you have Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders. Right?
Taysom Hill, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. But and Latavius Murray.
Right.
Drew Brees isn't throwing the ball more than 15 yards down the field anymore.
Right.
So I would take...
His downfield passing, I was looking at it, I think it was like 20% less than what Kyler Murray completed last
year. Oh, I'm sure. But that's why Michael Thomas has so many receptions, is because they're all within 10 yards.
Yeah.
Like, he's not getting chunk yardage, and I'm not taking anything away from Michael Thomas. But I would take, right now, Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, who's probably the most underrated receiver in the league, and DK Metcalf and that running back core over the Saints offense 100 times out of 100. With Russell Wilson at quarterback? Absolutely. It doesn't matter about the offensive line. They haven't had an offensive line in a decade. And it hasn't mattered. I mean, since they, after they traded Mike, or they got rid of, I mean, wait, who is, oh, they traded Max Unger for Jimmy Graham. They punted. They're like, you know what? I'm out. Russell Wilson will take care of it. So I think Seattle's even a little undervalued on this list.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy to see that. And then you've got, you have to go way down the list. Los Angeles is going to have to figure something out as far as the Rams are concerned. I know Sean McVay is an offensive genius, but he showed that he was human last year. They're all the way down this list at 19. So there are three teams in this division that are going to make some noise, according to The Athletic, scoring some points. It is. I think that they're all interchangeable as well. I mean, it is much hype that surrounds and as much credit as we give Russell Wilson and then the Niners being there with George Kittle and that run game that you mentioned. I think that the Arizona Cardinals could easily hurdle them offensively if things go well.
Yeah, and this wouldn't even be that big of a jump. So on this list, it shows the efficiency rankings from last year. The Cardinals were 13. So that's from the doldrums of college football in 2018 to above the middle of the pack in the NFL in a year, which is unbelievable.
Right.
So let's just everybody pump the brakes. This isn't Kansas City Chiefs offense.
Right.
Okay, so just because it's going to be a flashy style, don't be surprised if Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds, even Eno Benjamin, whoever in the running back room, gets a lot of touches getting the ball handed off to them. Like, this isn't going to be... For the Cardinals to mature as an offense, they need to not go three and out on three short passes. You know, that's not what mature offenses do. They're always keeping the defense guessing, and I'm not talking about just the first 20 scripted plays. I'm just talking about in general. How many three and outs happened in less than 45 seconds last year with the Cardinals because it was three ill-timed pass plays, and that was it? So you're not going to see that as much this year, which would make the efficiency rating go up. Just don't expect them to score 40 points a game.
Well, yeah.
You know, just don't expect that.
They have to figure out their red zone woes from last year as well. I mean, and DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a big factor
in
that.
He's maybe the best red zone target in the NFL, like, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, not name a tight end. You know, Zach Ertz is probably number one or number two. But, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins in the red zone can catch anything through anything.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch, that's for sure. Can't wait to kind of see how these rankings play out. It's Locked On Cardinals. We're going to be back with you guys tomorrow. Another podcast. More, hopefully some more information on this Marcus Gilbert, or just more information coming out of training camp as they gear up. We're 4 days away from the team making the move to Glendale and maybe practices beginning for this squad. Can't wait to get into that as well. Alex Clancy. Follow him on Twitter at Clancy's Corner. Follow me on Twitter at Bob Rack. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Draft Dudes.